This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. We had an episode already in the can, ready to go, part two of our special guest roundtable for Star Trek Discovery. But then we had breaking news. Brian, there was breaking news. It broke all over the place.
It did. It's pretty big news.
Well, it's pretty big topic for conversation. I don't actually think it's news. We're going to get to
that in a
moment.
That's true. It's more of a rumor kind of thing.
Yeah, big rumor. Big rumor came to town. But it was too much fun not to talk about. So before we get into the episode that you're waiting for, which brings back our roundtable of David Sims and Matt Patches and Emma Stefanski, you may have seen on the internet less than 12 hours ago, that there was an article in Deadline.com. And Deadline is an industry rag, Brian. It's like, it's like Variety or The Hollywood Reporter, but perhaps even more, they're a little more, they trade in rumor a little bit more than the others. And they had a scoop. Now, sometimes when they have a scoop, it's because they actually have reporters on the ground that are squeezing information out of people, or sometimes they get a story leaked to them by a studio that wants to have a headline fly around the internet to test the waters and see how people will react. And the headline scoop was, and I quote, Quentin Tarantino hatches Star Trek movie idea, Paramount J.J. Abrams to assemble writer's room. So the story is this. As you know, Paramount has, CBS has the TV, Paramount has the movies. That's part of the Viacom split from X amount of years ago. The Abramsverse, or Kelvin Universe, Kelvin Timeline trilogy, does tie up on a nice bow. The end of Beyond is kind of a perfect ending. They're all gazing up as the ship is rebuilt for more adventures. But, you know, a studio like Paramount will want more Star Trek. Star Trek, as a general rule, tends to be a moneymaker, you know, and it's a good thing to hang your brand on. You know, every studio wants to have their franchise, you know. Marvel's got their Avenger, you know, Disney's got their Marvel and
Disney's
their Star
got everything.
Wars, and, the other studio has, that's why Universal started that Dark Universe thing, which was a disaster, you know.
Isn't that already dead now?
Well, if it ain't dead, it's barely breathing, let's put it that way. So, they want to keep Star Trek alive. Now, there was talk last year that there was a script in development that would bring Chris Pine's Kirk back with his father, George Kirk, that was played by Chris Hemsworth in the first film, back before we knew he was Thor. And that was a cool idea, and there was some talk about that. I also heard a rumor that I'm not at liberty to divulge. I must keep my sources to the vest, but I heard a rumor about another story, which was pretty cool, not expected, by writers that are pretty neat. So that was floating around also. And then there was, then there's all kinds of crazy rumor. They're gonna reboot everything and recast the new Kirk and Spock. They're gonna do something. They're gonna reboot TNG. And oh my God, now who the hell knows what they're gonna do? But the thing is, they're gonna do something. There has also been change in the management at Paramount. The new guy's in charge now, blah, blah, blah. And Abrams, who's not, it doesn't have to go through him, but, Bad Robot did do, J.J. Abrams' company Bad Robot did do the first trilogy, and it's kind of like, they would have to pass first before they could bring it to new producers. Now you get something coming out of totally left field. Quentin Tarantino has long loved Star Trek. Brian, I ask you, do you remember what the first thing you see on the screen in Kill Bill Volume 1?
No, I don't.
It's a quote. Quote, revenge is a dish best served cold. And then it lingers there, and then it comes in, Khan, Noonien, and Singh.
That's
right.
And
it gets a big laugh when you see it in the theater.
That's right.
And, his whole career has been playing off of pop culture long before everybody else did it. I mean, his, you know, use of Partridge Family music in Reservoir Dogs was a revelation at the time. So he loves Trek, and his fandom is legit. You can go online and Google interviews of him talking about this for a while. About his, you know, he talked about Star Trek for a while. I mean, he lists Wrath of Khan as like one of his 10 favorite movies of all time. So then, the other thing is, there was another interview a year ago on the website Cinema Blend, if you want to check it out, where he talked about, he kind of teased the idea of what he would do if he were to make a Star Trek movie, and he said something really weird and unique, which is the old episodes, TOS, are perfect, but they were shot in 8 days on a 60s budget, on a low budget, and they only had 52 minutes. You know, what if you had 2 hours to really sink into an episode like City on the Edge of Forever with a modern budget and, you know, hopefully the crew they have now, which is the awesome reboot crew, you know, what would that be like? So I don't know that that's what he's pitching to J.J. Abrams, but that's pretty fascinating. So there are all these things to think about. Now, when this news broke, the internet, because it's the internet, was like, this sucks. You know, how's this going to work?
Oh, that's how the internet works.
That's how the internet works. Now, it is true that Quentin Tarantino's style is very specific. You know, you know when you're watching one of his movies. They don't feel, there's always an element of like postmodern reflectionism. Like for even the best example is Inglourious Basterds. Most of it does play, much of it plays like a real World War II movies, but then there's the moment where they introduce the character of Hugo Stieglitz, and then you just hear Sam Jackson go like, Hugo Stieglitz, and then there's like guitar trills, and like, you know, like his name flashes on the screen in like a 70s metal font. Like, what the hell is that all about? So initially you're like, well, you can't do that in a Star Trek movie because that's never been done before. I say unto you, Brian, why the hell not?
Yeah, I agree. He has a very unique, interesting style, and I mean, sometimes it borders on, you know, a little on the graphic side, but exactly, why not?
I say why not because not every Star Trek movie, and I want the listeners to hold on to something while I say this, not every Star Trek movie is a home run. This is a franchise that survived Cybok. This is a franchise that survived Star Trek V. This is a franchise that, now I'm really going to get controversial, survived Star Trek Into Darkness, which, at the end of the day, I have often made wishy-washy statements about how it's not that bad, there are parts that are good. Ultimately, it's a bad decision. I mean, like, if Star Trek Into Darkness were to vanish off the face of the Earth, I think we'd all be okay. Doesn't mean it's not good at times. So why not roll the dice? And it's not just some weirdo coming out of nowhere. It's Quentin Tarantino. It's like one of the most important filmmakers of the last quarter century, and yes, I mean, clearly he will have to you know, tamp down some of his usual proclivities. You can't have quite the amount of violence and foul language, but I think maybe he thinks of it as an interesting experiment for him.
Well, you know what though, I mean, I think the violence and language have already been amped up in Discovery.
Yes, to a degree.
Maybe that's testing the waters for Quentin Tarantino.
Pretty gross. I mean, yes, the scenes in Discovery, there are bodies torn and twisted and strewn apart, and the F barrier has been broken, but, you
granted,
know,
that's
still
nothing. That's nothing compared to a Tarantino film.
Right, exactly. Exactly. But again, it's like, why not give it a try? Now, here's the thing. I don't think we should get too excited about this, because in Hollywood, people, When you have the dough and the clout that somebody like Tarantino does and J.J. Abrams does to pitch a produce, you know, if you're a writer director like Tarantino, to pitch an idea to Abrams and then to throw some money at developing a screenplay, one that he's not even going to do himself because he is currently working on another project, that sort of thing is part and parcel in Hollywood. There's a whole shadow industry out there of keeping writers busy and paid on projects that will never see the light of day. And it's done, God knows why, to keep just the gears moving. It's a way for the studios to, like, keep an eye on developing talent to see who's, you know, they farm, and to them it's not a lot of money. You know, to a struggling screenwriter, you get $60,000, you're like, hot damn, that's $60,000. That's you know, I can live on that for a year. And to a studio like Paramount, that's a snack, you know. So to dole out that kind of dough to keep a project going is, they do that sort of thing every day. It's just that we never hear about it because it's not Star Trek and it's not Tarantino. So the chances of Quentin Tarantino directing a Star Trek movie are quite slim. I would say even Spock himself would have difficulty computing the number.
Illogical.
It's illogical. But there's a possibility that out of this process, this writer's room that, you know, Abrams is going to find X amount of writers, probably unknowns, maybe one guy or gal who's a little bit better known, and they're going to take Quentin's pitch, which is probably not even written down. It's him just going, okay, guys, so blah, 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 blah. Then Spock comes in, blah, blah, blah. And who knows if it's even TOS. It may have new characters. I mean, clearly, if it's going to have Chekhov, they're going to have a problem. So I don't know. Yes. You know, who the hell knows? It could be TNG. It could be new characters.
You know, I wouldn't mind seeing a completely original Star Trek movie.
Totally new characters. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you get, you know, would be cool. Like, it starts on a starbase, and like Bones is there. You know, he's there, like working at the infirmary. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of like the current comics. You know, in the current comics continuity, which is post Beyond, most of our characters are spread out on other ships doing other things. And, you know, Uhura and Spock are on New Vulcan, and, you know, Kirk's flying around on another ship, and Sulu's doing his own thing. So, you know, it could be anything. So, anyway, it's possible that coming out of this writer's room, you know, experiment, will come a really good script. And it'll eventually get produced, and it'll be story by Quentin Tarantino, written by writer XYZ, directed by, who knows, could be Justin Lin again, you know, it could be anybody. So, you know, when you see on the internet Tarantino directing Star Trek, that's not exactly what this news is. What he's done is he pitched JJ, and JJ is no fool, because it's good to be in the Quentin Tarantino business.
Yep.
Paramount likes being in the Quentin Tarantino business. I mean, the other thing is, Tarantino's been on the scene since 92, but he was always tied at the hip to Harvey Weinstein, right?
Oh,
Harvey
yeah.
Weinstein found him, Harvey Weinstein groomed him, and up until the recent terrible events where it was, you know, finally discovered that Weinstein's a scumbag and he's no longer working and he should rot in hell, Tarantino's now sort of a free agent. So he's doing his next movie, which is about Charles Manson, with Sony. And there was a bit of a bidding war to get him, you know, because even if his movies don't make that much money, it's just good to be in the genius business. It's just good publicity.
Critical
for the
darlings.
Studio. Yeah, it's like a feather in their cap. It's like, we've got Quentin. Who have you got? You know, that's how these guys stay in business. And sometimes Tarantino's movies do make a lot of money. Paramount's chomping at the bit. Of course we want to be in the Quentin Tarantino business, you know? Yes. So when JJ says, he sent me a pitch. Should I throw money against it to develop it? Absolutely you should. Get that going. That's terrific news. And, you know, and it keeps their Star Trek train running while they figure out what the hell they want to do. You know, in 6 months, they're going to have a new script to look at. And 6 months, who knows how long these things take. Maybe they take 1 month. Maybe they take three. I have no idea. But it takes X amount of time. And then and then they're going to have it. So, you know, it could be cool. But I did see instant reflex on the internet saying, no, 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 this was terrible, terrible, terrible. Why is it terrible? Why, Brian?
Yeah, I don't know why it's terrible. I mean, to me, I would like, I think everyone would agree, we would like to see more Star Trek movies, regardless of, you know, who's directing them or writing them or starring in them even. But we want more of them. We don't want Star Trek movies to die.
Right. And I think if you bring in somebody who's got a lot of clout and a very specific vision, there's a better chance of making that happen. Because right now, there's no developments happening. You know, Beyond came out a year and some months ago, and there's been silence, you know. And Zoe Saldana, who plays Uhura, you know, she's a busy woman. She's got Marvel films, and she's got how many Avatar sequels?
Yeah.
So, you know, they got to figure that out, and then they also got to figure out what to do about Chekhov, because you don't want to be disrespectful to Anton Yelchin, but also Chekhov is an important character. So that's another thing to think about. So when you get somebody coming in out of left field like Tarantino, it's going to take somebody like that to say, you know, we're going to do it really different and try it. You know, who knows? If it's terrible, it's terrible. You know, that's all there is to it. So, you know, that was my reaction. When I saw the news, I was certainly like, what? Like, this can't be true. What the hell are they talking about? And then I read it, and I had no opinion at first. I was just like, what are they talking about? Then I went on Twitter, and since everybody was upset, clearly, like a normal person, I immediately want to say, to react negatively to anybody who says no, because so had everybody on Twitter been thrilled, then I would have hated it. That's my issue. I need to work on that with a therapist. But my issue was, I saw a lot of negativity, and then I just said, no, why are you being negative? Let's give it a shot. So the bottom line is, one, I think it's interesting. Two, I don't think it's ever going to happen. You know, with him being like, you know, I am the director of this, but it could lead to further developments, and that could be interesting, you know? That's about it. And again, Star Trek movies are not always, you know, perfect gems, you know what I mean? We've had some clunkers. We've had Star Trek V, we've had Nemesis and Insurrection, all of which have good points in them, good moments. There are moments in Star Trek V I love. Insurrection, probably some good scenes in that. I don't remember it too well. F. Murray Abraham is in it. It's not that bad. But, you know, come on. Like, Star Trek movies have whiffed before. Why not whiff in an unusual way if it turns out to be a mistake? That is my conclusion. Brian, do you agree or disagree?
I completely agree.
Wow. Look at that. It's like we're two peas in a pod.
No dissension in the ranks here.
No dissension. All right. Well, listen, so this is our emergency preamble. How long have we been talking?
15 minutes.
All right. We said we would talk for 5, and it was 15.
Well,
that's
all right.
Let's now kick it back over to last week, part 2, with Emma, David, and Matt.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds.
Engage. Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Specialist Burnham.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And to make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Sailing frequencies open, sir.
And we are back. My wife just texted me. She said, okay. Everybody, my wife just said, okay. Great, we're back.
Okay.
Welcome once again to Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. We love it here on Engage, and set your phasers to fun.
Set your phasers on stun.
No, fun. Set your phasers on fun. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got three guests with us today. We have, my name is Jordan Hoffman. Facebook.com/Engage Official Star Trek Podcast, or at Jay Hoffman on Twitter. With us, as last week, we have Matthew Patches. Say hello, Matthew.
Hello.
And Matt Patches writes at Thrillist.com. He is a cultural critic.
Sure.
And you write about...
I'm the executive editor.
Executive
of Thrillist.
Get your executive ass out of here. Yeah. Executive
well,
editor.
You wouldn't go on the bridge and call someone... Ensign, would you?
No, there's a lot of great stuff at Thrillist.com. It's a wonderful website. Another great cultural writer we have with us again this week is Emma Stefanski. Emma, hello. It's good to see you.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Emma writes for Vanity Fair and for Screen Crush. You remember our friend Matt Singer. He's been on the show a few times. And other places. Bright Wall, Dark Room, right?
Yep.
Is that true, or did I make that up? Because you gave me a look last week.
I mean, it's just been a long time. I wrote a piece about how I'm in love with... Oh my God!
Who are you in love with?
Real love,
real
love.
It's true love.
It's true love.
I'm in love with
it's a movie.
Sake, Donnie from The Big Lebowski.
That's what
Steve Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi.
Yeah,
God,
Donnie from.
But
Cargo.
I mean, his character specifically. That's what I wrote.
Really in love with Donnie.
Mm-hmm. And the artist who works for them drew a really great picture. It's like his head with a
She came to my
around
wedding.
It. The Aww. Heart's made of bowling
Are you
pins.
Into Buscemi in general or just...
Yeah, I think he's great.
Did you ever see the movie Trees Lounge that he directed?
Great movie.
So good.
You know my wife
movie.
Founded Brightwell background?
I did know that.
And that's why I brought yes. it up. It's a very incestuous group here. Matt yeah. Patch's wife, Ms. X, was the founder.
Michelle
of
Said. Oh, okay. Well, Michelle Patches, I guess.
Michelle Said Patches.
Michelle Said Patches.
Matt Patches' wife, Michelle Said Patches.
She does a Riverdale podcast. I should plug it.
Oh,
in.
Wonderful. Yeah. I know what it's called. It's got a great name.
The Place of Pep.
Podcast of Pep.
Yes, that's it. All right.
Michelle Said Patches is one of my favorite people in general, but also when you say her name, you've said a sentence.
That's true.
Well, someone recently pointed out to me that
we haven't introduced you yet.
Sure, sorry.
Sitting next to Emma, are we? So you loved. Wait, so bring it back here, Donnie.
I'm never getting introduced.
He was obnoxious. He didn't know what was going on. He was confused.
Yeah. I am the walrus.
He's just great. He's just a little guy. He's trying his best.
He's Ash now.
He is.
Yeah.
He's mostly on Jeff Bridges' face.
Yeah, his face.
Everything with you is a catastrophe. well, that's dynamite. I haven't read that piece, but I'm going to set my web browsers to stun and read that when I get a chance.
Energized.
David Sims, you write for The Atlantic and TheAtlantic.com.
I do, mostly TheAtlantic.com.
And you're a great man, David Sims.
Thank All you. Right. Someone recently pointed out, I was going to say, that my byline with one extra consonant is David Swims The Atlantic. So there
yes.
you go. I can't remember who did that.
That was Michael Arbiter. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Oh, there you go.
Who has not been on the show because...
Get him on.
Michael Burnham Arbiter.
He doesn't want to be on the show. All right, cool. So we're all here, and last week we were just about to bring up one of the key elements of Star Trek Discovery. This is the recap roundtable part two, and what drives the Discovery?
The spore drive.
Which is
sorry, I promised myself I would do it.
I have, as a longtime Star Trek enthusiast, I have done a lot of work. You're just
you do a lot of that.
You're just taking the tube out and putting it in.
They put the tube somewhere else.
I have tried to...
What's the tube filled with? The mushroom
spores. The mushroom spores. Okay, I have tried in my days to understand the concept of subspace and warp bubbles and warp pathways.
That stuff I get.
And I...
this stuff I don't get.
You know what? I'm too old for this shit.
Uh-huh.
So I turn my brain off and I say, I know that they think they know what they're talking about. Because this Paul Stamets is a real person.
Did oh,
you
really? Know this? I didn't know that.
There is a, this all started when Fuller watched a TED Talk by the actual Paul Stamets. Google, you got your
I'm
your
Googling
device.
It.
So it's like how Michael Dorn played Worf's grandfather in The Undiscovered Country.
Well, that
so
I
there's like
know.
Worf and Worf, Worf's grandpa and Worf.
Well, and also
Junior.
There was Dr. Sung's grandfather.
That's
on
right.
Enterprise,
on Enterprise, that was ill-advised.
Yes,
in my
Paul
opinion.
Stamets is a real American mycologist.
Yes.
And on his Wikipedia page, he's holding a giant
spore
mushroom.
Oh my
it's
god!
It looks like a hamburger.
It's huge.
Yeah, there's a picture
of it. Looks like a Mondo
body.
And Brian
looks like a Pokemon.
I want to let you know, Brian. Brian's with us again as always.
Hello.
We're working to get this guy on the show.
Oh, like, that's awesome!
I ran it by some people in high places.
Federation Starfleet.
I said we'll get Stamets.
Yeah, he seems pretty busy.
Well, making spores.
He's a bit. How many Wikipedia pages do you have of you holding giant mushrooms in the?
I better check after this.
So he's a real dude, and he gave a TED Talk, which is on YouTube, which I have not watched yet because I'm a very busy man. And allegedly, he said these theories that inspired Fuller to conceive of the mycelium network and the ability to basically.
Go anywhere.
Warp space
any
and time, a wrinkle in.
A trans warp.
A trans warp drive, a teleportation, some sort of instantaneous propulsion via the magic of spores and the understanding.
Cue the Grateful Dead or the fish.
So awesome.
Is there a Rush album that goes along with this talk?
But not only that, one needs to be working in concert with the spores and have an understanding of them on a molecular level, as do the tardigrades. Which are real creatures, but they're usually microscopic.
Sure, sure.
But in space, two things happen. No one can hear you scream.
Sure.
And tardigrades are the size of rhinoceroses.
They're very big.
So you get
and they can rip you into bits.
They killed Landry.
I know.
Rekha Sharma from
Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, they killed the Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, the tardigrade was the Hombre.
Hombre.
What's the gorilla's name?
Harambe.
The Harambe of
wow.
I hate you for bringing up Harambe because I hate Harambe.
I only say it because
I love Harambe, but I was at the friggin' Bronx Zoo with my wife and my niece and nephew.
The
day that Harambe died, I was
Jesus.
That we went to the Bronx Zoo, which is a top quality zoo. Let me tell you, if you should ever be in town. So we take the niece and nephew to the Bronx Zoo because that's what uncles do, and we go into the monkey room, which I just offended primates. They're not monkeys, they're gorillas. Sure. You go into the gorilla room, and there's the big alpha gorilla there, and all I can do is think of Harambe memes the whole time. I'm like, you idiot. Like, stop your
just
brain.
Like magnificent creature.
Yeah, it's this
gorgeous. We need tardigrade.
With its whole family is there, and, you know, they have the gorilla room there is very well maintained. I'm just thinking, I'm like, I hate myself, I hate my life, I hate the internet.
But then you thought about Star Trek Discovery, and you thought about tardigrades, and now you're
you
back.
Thought about
now
the
you're
spore
back on
drive.
Track. Why don't you spore warp over to
Black
the
alert.
Conversation that makes sense.
Warp
Black,
one
Black
I'm
alert
just doing
back.
The soundboard myself.
And here, do you want to touch
no, 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 no. It's I just like it when you press it.
Yeah, well, we'll get one soon.
The spore drive.
Yeah. So what do you, I don't understand it because I haven't taken the time to try to understand it. I have a date with that TED Talk someday because I want to understand it. And I know the fact that they think it's real, like we had Anthony Rapp on the show and he was not, I wanted to make mushroom jokes with him.
He wasn't having it because he's
no,
like, this
he
is
was
science.
Like, this is so freaking real. Like, right. And I take my job seriously and you're an idiot. And
it sounds like a great interaction.
Yeah, it's a great interview. It's really a highlight. He really takes it seriously. And so he believes it and he knows it. I think the writers do understand it. So I love that.
It makes sense to me, of course. Yeah. Also that Stamets should believe this in his bones.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Apparently the real Paul Stamets believes that fungi, mushrooms can be used to change the universe, on a galactic level. You can use them to terraform. You can create new planets with fungi.
Emma is genuinely astonished right now.
Of course, if you eat a bunch of mushrooms and then start thinking about that TED Talk, you could probably come up with this web.
What do you have to
Anthony Rapp wouldn't like that joke.
Yeah, marinate them in Worcestershire sauce for a while, and they can really take on a nice quality.
Apparently, Paul Stamets is very against gourmet mushrooms.
He does not like eating mushrooms.
No.
Really?
Not that's even like truffles? I can understand somebody who works with animals becoming a vegetarian, but you can't be an anti.
He works with mushrooms, man. Stop eating them.
Feelings?
They don't have feelings. This guy's ridiculous.
No.
Brian's coming in.
He's got to eat mushrooms because on his website, which is linked on Wikipedia, is fungi.com.
Yeah.
You got fungi.com.
You can buy fungi.
You can buy. You can buy Paul's fake bacon mushroom bits, which calls is a recipe that calls for shiitake mushrooms.
Yeah, but it's made with actual bacon. He's like, kill the pigs.
The bacon is fake.
No, the bacon is fake.
Using mushrooms to make fake bacon.
Unless there's bacon mushrooms and
it's
they are
fake. It's just a hop and a step from making fake bacon to traveling the galaxy.
So
bacon really is everything. The internet got it right.
So he says that there could potentially be look, there are some things that sound too good to be true that are true. Like vis-a-vis teleportation. You remember the Jim Jarmusch movie Only Lovers Left Alive, where they talk about spooky action at a distance, which goes directly to Einstein, and it's true. There are tiny neutrinos that if one is in California and the other one is in Bombay, you hit one with a photon, the other one reacts. It makes no logical sense, but it's true. Why? Because we don't really understand quantum physics.
There's a mycelial network all around.
Well, that could be it now.
I just poked the mycelial network.
Well, it works with, if you think about biologically, mushrooms do have huge root systems that they are all connected to in the forest, and trees do it too. So I guess I can believe that on a speculative level.
Yeah.
That's all we need. I mean, whatever. They got a teleportation drive here.
I don't know. First of all, why are you so object? Nothing has to be a question. We're just having a conversation.
Well,
about
I didn't know
drive.
If you felt like.
Do
the
we
show...
like the spore drive?
Right.
Are you
so
asking that?
I think the question
I love
is.
This. It's my favorite character.
The tardigrade is one of my favorite characters.
Well, no, I actually do have a friend. I have a friend who is very science oriented. He's a computer programmer. And he sent me a note. He's like, I'm off Discovery. I'm like, why? He's like, this mushroom drive is idiotic. And I'm like, why? Like, that's the thing that's going to annoy you? Is the I'm like, the mushroom drive is fine. How is any different than a warp bubble? He's like, stupid. I'm like, all right, fine.
Well, sounds like a really great conversation.
He's a friend.
I mean, they say it a lot. So if it's
spore drive, yeah.
If you think really it's silly, then the emphasis on it is going to
right.
Drive
no, I think it's great. I think they came up with
away.
A weird way to have a new way of doing things and to make the ship.
The Discovery.
The kick-ass ship. It can boot. And it did. We've seen it in action. It spins around. It's very photogenic also. It spins around. Does a sideways
do they
swirl.
Feel the spinning when it drops. Does that every time? Yeah.
I don't think
well,
they
well, that's
do.
Why
I
they have they a black alert. They have to strap in. And they do. Yeah, they do. They go on their... I guess it would get you dizzy.
Well, I mean, but it's space. It's zero gravity. I mean, I don't know. You can really spin any direction
well,
you
wait,
like.
Wait, when
it
they do the black...
So quickly.
Black alert.
First black alert. First she sees liquid.
Yeah, there's rain.
Well, they never really got the drive working until they got the tardigrade.
That was pre them cracking up.
Right.
But
that happens in Battlestar Galactica too, where they do like a weird thing when they first jump
in the pilot.
And then they never do it.
They
again.
Never do that again.
Oh, like they're always like it's stretched.
Yeah,
across.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, I hate going faster than light, and they like brace themselves, yeah. And then they're like, wait, we can't have them do that.
And
every
they
time.
Realize that the line item in the budget was way too high.
But.
So.
I mean, my only problem with the spore drive is the nerdy problem where I'm like, well, this can't exist in the future. Oh, my God, I'm throwing bottles.
He's crushing bottles. He's so
you know,
mad.
Like, you know, this has to be temporary, right?
Right.
So it's like I like the idea of it, but I'm sort of annoyed where I'm like, they're going to have to find some way out of it.
They're
going to
do, then Brian and I have talked about it, they're going to do a C-3PO gets its mind wiped eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
They
right.
have
Which
to.
Is, well, again, it's
not
okay.
Point of contention. There's a few options here.
All right, what's your, what is your option?
Well, one, the Discovery never comes back. Or,
possible.
Or two,
right.
Discovery comes back way into the future after timelines that we know of, and it actually can exist.
Be amazing.
Well, sure, but I mean,
they decide that it is scientifically unethical to use the spore drive.
Right, that seems the most likely.
It could be. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. Now that Stamets in the last shot seems to be...
He's gone white.
Screwy. And someone suggested, Floater, that he becomes the traveler from TNG, or a traveler.
Ooh. Sure. Interesting.
He could become part of that world. The Tau Ceti traveler.
Remember when he would just show up?
What do we
and be
think
like,
is going
Resident.
On with him? Like, what has the effect? What? Because
well, you drop
wait,
enough
was it
acid,
you
get crazy.
He seems sort of unstuck in time.
Was
He's turning into a Trafalmadorian.
The mirror effect where he
no that was when he first
later.
that was when he first
jacks
put it
in.
Jacks
that was
in,
very creepy
and it was a great creepy. Scene yeah. because it was
so what do you think that was
he is trans and also
listen Paul Stamets has become unstuck in time
no,
right?
well,
what you actually
that's
call,
what it is
yeah. what you actually call him was the Dr. Manhattan of Star Trek
he's the Dr. Manhattan of Star Trek yes thank you for quoting me back Brian he and remember he was during the time loops he stayed constant he couldn't die. So he is existing outside of the four dimensions that we live in right now, and but he can't control it yet.
Sure,
because he doesn't. He's a newcomer.
So the question is: does he start to control it so much that he becomes like a
god,
wacky alien, right?
Yeah.
Or well, is it going to go away?
Well, there. If I were, I think the more obvious point is because this crew that's making the show really loves the original series, and if you remember, the first pilot where no man has gone before, Gary Mitchell. He transcends, goes through the galactic barrier, he gets white eyes, like Stamets does, and he eventually has godlike powers and becomes evil, and Kirk has to kill him, which is upsetting because they were old chums.
Yeah. He uses the big phaser rifle.
He uses the big phaser rifle right there in Delta Vegas. So it's possible that is the route they're going, but every time the show, you think you know where it's going, they take a left turn.
Mm.
For example, my favorite example is the episode with Saru, down on the planet, where
like you're pointing to me.
Well, because I know that you're a
Saru's biggest fan
a
over
Saru-ite.
Here. You're tall, like Saru.
I identify with him. You know,
Saru has this. When he goes to meet with the Povins, and he crushes the communicators. Says we're hanging out. The Povins know the right way. And you think he becomes a cult member, and you think he must be contaminated by Povins, like because we saw that blue light, and you think that you know they must have, you know,
they're evil,
they possessed him,
yeah.
And Burnham even said, "This is not you," and she shoots him with a stun gun. And when she shoots him, you think you've been trained by a zillion episodes of Star Trek, the blue light's gonna escape, and he's gonna be like, "Oh, I'm free," but that's not what happened.
Yeah,
he he that was the left turn, and that's what the show keeps doing, is you think you know what's going to happen, well, F you, we're going to spin it around. And Saru was actually just acting out. Notice that he was not put on trial for mutiny.
No. Well, he didn't. Oh, you mean because of that?
Yeah, sexism. Well, they did Michael Burnham, but not Saru.
Well, he wasn't, you know, because, I mean, how many...
Slightly different.
Right. There, how many Star Trek episodes have there been where some crew member gets possessed by a force?
Well, that's just the thing, is they did the twist. Yeah. So the point I'm making is...
I did not detect this as a twist. I don't...
That was funny. It was a lack of twist. That's, it got me. I was very... So anyway...
I liked it, yeah.
It was just
caught up in the...
It got started a little bit with the mirror, the shot in the mirror after the toothbrushes. The first time we see Stamets and Culber, where they do not, where they're engaged, they're very much domestic
they're
partners,
engaged.
Brushing their
engaged.
Teeth.
Engaged.
Engaged. Nice. The official marriage podcast.
Right. It's very nice. And it's sweet. And then I didn't even notice it the first time because I was, as someone who's been writing about Star Trek on the internet for a decade, I was very excited, as you yawn, I was very excited to see same-sex domestic partnership on television, even if it's streaming. And so and my wife's like, oh, wow, that was freaky. I'm like, what?
The mirror thing. Oh, I see, right. Because that's also right. That's the moment where it's sort of being laid out to the audience, like, oh, they're a couple, they live together.
Wait, your wife said, that's freaky, and you're like, no, this is a very acceptable type of behavior right now.
Finally accepting.
Listen, funny. I thought I knew who you were, a lot of people are in relationships like this.
So she's like, no, it was like Twin Peaks. Rewind it a little bit. I'm like, oh my God, he's in the mirror still moving around. So we don't know what's up with Stamets, but it sounds to me like we've got three people here that are pro Spore Drive.
I'm basically pro it. I just think I just sort of want to know what they're going to do.
I think it's created
that.
A lot of interesting ethical conversations,
right.
Mm-hmm. About how to use the animals, how to use Stamets, how far to push people in a time of war, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You have talked a lot about on this podcast about, is Lorca like an evil guy? Is he conspiratorial? Is he like, what is he up to?
Yeah.
But I find a lot of his decisions, I'm kind of on the side that Lorca is not nefarious in any way, that he is just a general who has to step over the line and will win at any cost.
He's got to do what he's got to do.
Sometimes it makes him look like a hero. Yeah, yeah, and just by the means to the end. And, you know, killing Stamets in the
chamber.
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
he was ready to kill Stamets, right?
I guess so.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Do you think if Stamets had to die, I mean, and the numbers, he's like, we're going to save a trillion lives if we end this
he's
war
making
right
that.
Now.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's very startling for us to see someone like
right,
that.
Because on
especially
Star Trek, well, yes, and also
it's very Romulan.
It's
in
Romulan,
my opinion.
But also it mirrors Wrath of Khan, and we're used to seeing an important character voluntarily go into a chamber and sacrifice themselves. Mm. We're not used to seeing them ordered into a chamber.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've always found it not disappointing, but you know, it's rare-ish for Star Trek to confront the fact that it's a show about a military organization, maybe not in name, but in structure. You know, this is a chain of command system,
right,
where you accept your orders.
They always try to downplay. This is a ship of exploration. It's like,
right,
yeah,
but
well,
they're a military. They're very naval, and you know, I mean, obviously there have been many episodes that have sort of touched
sure,
on this
right.
stuff, but like a whole show, you know, trying to dig into that is interesting.
That's why I'm hoping that Lorca isn't. Doesn't
like a secret villain or whatever.
Right, because in the beginning, it's from like the promos and stuff, I'm like, oh, there it is. It's just like Into Darkness. It's just like the other
sure,
Star Trek
right.
movies where there's going to be a mole and he's bad and he's up to
well, and also he's famous,
technology.
So you're thinking, oh, did they just get Isaacs for one season? And
right,
you know,
right.
Or whatever. You know, you have these thoughts.
And I'm glad that it's more complicated than that. I don't think anyone on the ship is corrupt. Necessarily, but I do think they're using.
I think we
military technology.
I'm not 100% sold on that yet. You know, I don't know.
You think he still might be a?
I feel like
you don't cast Lucius Malfoy as a good guy.
What?
I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like
we
he's
have to
a
talk about Awake.
Bad guy.
His short-lived
oh,
NBC
boy,
drama
Awake.
That was incredible, where he's a hero.
Wait,
and
it was interesting.
Caught between two
worlds, nighttime and daytime.
Love that
have
show.
Have you watched
it's on Netflix?
The OA. The OA.
The OA.
Yeah. He's on the OA.
Yeah, he was on the OA. Brian's a big The OA fan,
but,
and I haven't.
He was a very conflicted character in that as well, which I've said in the show before.
Yeah.
But he's a little more on the villainous side there, but he's still interesting, and it's not like like mustache twirling villain, but you know, yeah,
it's great in the Death of Stalin. It's great coming out next year.
I know. Ooh, I'm excited for that movie. I haven't seen it yet. Well, you know, it seems I'm glad we talked a little bit about that, and I do want to bring up more about Lorca, because when you're with him, you never really quite know what time it is. But what's interesting is that if you get a movement watch, you'll always know what time it is. And luckily, movement watches are the sponsors of this podcast here. And if you go to mvmt.com/engage, you're going to get 15% off with free shipping and, Emma, free returns, which I
Thank
find
goodness.
To be a little redundant, because who returns a movement watch?
You, nobody.
You, when you get a movement watch, you grab it with both.
Who in your right you
keep,
mind?
You keep it. Now, they look very nice. Here, let me show, here, let me do an experiment on you. Look at this wrist.
I'm looking.
This is
here
like
it
a,
is.
You're not. This, you're like, eh, get that wrist away from me. Mm-hmm. Even a little ugh. Now look at this wrist.
Hey. Oh, wow.
Holy
now that's
smokes.
A wrist.
It's like you got to make a call when you see that wrist. You're like, I just saw a wrist, let me tell you. Because this wrist is one with, David, a movement watch on it.
Hey.
And you can see it looks very sleek.
There it is.
Very stylish.
I like the blue.
Professional. Mm-hmm.
Blue face.
But that's here is the punchline. This, you might think, would cost hundreds of dollars in a department store. mvmt.com/engage, you get this for $95.
Wow,
very nice.
Yeah, there we can go to. If you go to mvmt.com, you can check out all the different models. They got them big, they got them small, they got them in so-called ladies and men's, depending on what you're how you want it to look. And their shtick is minimalism. You know, they're not gonna blow you away with a lot of gadgets and gewgaws. You know, they're kind of sleek. Like the Shenzhou, you know, it's a kind of sleek watch. So movement watches are great for the holidays. The holidays are coming up. And Brian, I think that if you don't know yet what you're going to get for a holiday gift.
I do now.
Get a movement watch. It can't hurt because, like I say, they're $95. MVMT.com/engage gets you 15% off, free shipping, free returns. Check out what they got there. And I'm sick to death of seeing people trying to, what time is it? And they dip into their pockets and grab their phones. Your phone is for talking. Your wrist is for knowing what time it is.
Fair enough.
So get on board.
As they say.
I just got a talking to.
It's an old quote.
Yeah, was that
old Vulcan,
Euripides?
Yeah, it was an old Vulcan saying. It was Surak in his teachings.
Of course.
So step up your game. You heard Emma herself. She saw. We did a science experiment. She heard one wrist. Really no response. The wristwatch wrist. Fell right off her chair.
Homeboy walks in wearing these. It's quiet. If he's wearing these.
Noise all around. Is that a movement watch or are you just happy to? So then we go to mvmt.com/engage. All right. So that's the deal with that. Now
engage.
What's exciting
Energize.
Is the next item up for bid is we were going to talk about, and we did talk about them a little bit, is the Klingons, right? Is it the next topic? Yeah, I want to talk about the Klingons. Let's not talk about the look, because we talked about it in episode one of this two-part roundtable recap. Mm. But we do want to talk a little bit about the storyline. T'Kuvma, Cole of House Kor, Laurel, Vok.
Keep going.
Dennis.
Names.
Dennis the Klingon?
Not Dennis, like Dennis the Menace. Dennis, Deneth. Uh-huh. And some others. There's a one shot of them all in holograms, like 12 Klingons. But you got Cole, of House Kor. And I've had it confirmed that he is of House Kor of Kor fame.
Sure.
So from TOS and the DS9, he is the same house. You got Vok, Mysterious Vok, and you got Tyler maybe too. What are you thinking about the whole Klingon story arc, Matt Patches?
I think it's compelling because I like being part of the Klingon behind the scenes operations. I like getting that glimpse. I recently rewatched one of Clint Eastwood's only good movies from the last 10 or 15 years.
Let me guess. Space Cowboys.
The Letters of Iwo Jima.
Great movie.
The companion film to Flags of Our Fathers.
Great movie,
a terrible movie.
Yeah, Flags of Our Fathers is pretty bad. Letters is great.
You know, which is Flags You're of right, Our Fathers that. Was about Iwo Jima.
Right.
And this
He's
kind
like,
of
hackneyed, show you the other side.
Patriotic film. Yeah, and then Letters of Iwo Jima was about the Japanese soldiers living out this hellish experience.
One good.
And just dying on their swords and all about pride and understanding that culture.
Is war heaven? I've heard that war is hell.
Good one. So war is hell.
This is me in reaction to that line.
Is there some sound effect? All right. Bye, Jordan. So,
seeing the other side.
It reminded me of Layers of Iwo Jima, and what it does so effectively is just see the inner workings and find that some people are totally on board. You know, mostly the people at the top are like, we're all going into battle, and we must serve the masters, and screw your guy. My guy's the best. And I like that they have a war going on internally. That's yes. interesting. Mm-hmm. The house. I don't know if there's enough show to allow for this to
That's
really take root and be fully formed. I find it a little confusing to like keep track of all the players involved in the Klingon side of this battle.
I think the Klingon side is done now. I think
it's 100% not coming back, and that like Laurel is going to be the only holdover.
Yeah, I think Laurel is going to be the only holdover because I think we're at least for the rest of season one.
Cole is dead, right?
Cole is dead.
Yep.
But are we going to be wherever they are? Is for the rest of season one?
I mean, I don't have any. I don't.
It's called
I believe
the Star
so.
Trek Discovery.
Snap.
Emma just served a platter at
boom. Boom.
Hell.
Yeah. So you think that we're done with the Klingon War?
Snaps.
I think that, here's what I think. Yes, I do, for two reasons. Number one, we saw the sarcophagus ship explode. That was their flagship ship.
Yeah.
Two, they now know how to break through these rudimentary cloaking devices.
Right.
So once the rest of Starfleet has those codes,
you have to get on board the ships, right?
No, they hacked the
they hacked the system.
Oh, by doing
algorithm.
The by doing the one
yes
by doing the 230
doing that wacky move
thing. Okay.
That's how you
so
hack.
Now you know all the ships.
Now they know, and they even said it. There was the admiral, the Vulcan admiral. He's like, we've got the code now, right. And we're giving it to our other ships. So.
I think the show's
and
just
this
missing
is the end of the Klingon War that is
right.
referenced in the original series
I believe
all the time.
That
right? Like
to be
this
the
is
case.
What we just witnessed
yeah.
was that.
Which is right because right. Lorca says, you know, you started out as scientists and now you are warriors and you were there to stop the Klingon War. He said something very dramatic like that.
Yeah.
So,
but I think that yeah. the show is missing a standalone episode just about the Klingons. Mm. They never get enough time
yeah.
to really be fully formed or for me to invest in anyone, especially because we lose Vok. Now, maybe we don't.
Well.
Maybe, you know, we can get into that. But yeah. we do lose, like, he's important for the first two or three episodes after T'Kuvma is killed and he's, yeah. like, taking on the mantle. And then it gets, I'm
now
like, what right. happened to Vok? I totally forget what happens. And then it's only these conspiracy theories
yeah.
that fuel that. And then Laurel kind of mentioning him occasionally. It can be very confusing.
Okay, cool. Emma, what do you think about the Klingons?
I like them. I don't enjoy listening to them talk.
It's rough. I agree with that. It's rough.
It's really
They
annoying.
Made a choice.
I like that at the end. Burnham pulls out
the
translator,
translator,
and then
yeah.
everyone just gets
just
to talk in English now.
Yeah, that was.
But that's always been the trick. It's like everyone's got one, so
yeah.
that's when they all talk in English.
That was,
right? That was always sort of the. You know.
It wasn't until I heard them through the universal translator when I realized, yeah, maybe this would have been better off
right.
that way.
Yeah.
But they made a stylistic choice and they went with it. But other than hearing them talk, I mean, do you find yourself under like? Do you like, oh, I do grok these Klingons? Like, yeah, I do. Like, I understand their struggle, or is this like, ah, shut up already?
I think they're interesting in that they're very much a foil for Starfleet, in that they're like, they're very tribal and they're very like honor bound and
they're very different.
Very
like, it
different.
Does a good job. But,
yeah.
yeah.
And they look different and they sound different. They speak a different language. It's cool. And I enjoy like, I don't know. I enjoy learning the background information about them, but I don't necessarily enjoy sitting through the scenes where they're just like,
right.
oh, come on, can I just like read the transcript?
It also doesn't totally pay off. You'd think that if
yeah.
you're going to show both sides of this conflict, that there might be like a Burnham parallel or someone who
sure.
we would
well, I don't
invest
feel
in
any
as
sympathy.
Like the hero.
I,
of the
I,
yeah.
That's my problem.
I don't have anyone where I'm like, oh, I really,
no, like,
I'm really conflicted.
You
well, actually,
love
Vok
T'Kuvma.
Was kind of like that.
Well, sort of, because he wanted, well, T'Kuvma also, but his goals were interesting because he wanted to unite his people, which in theory sounds nice.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Garibaldi of Klingons. But he wanted to unite the people out of like xenophobia and
yeah.
and hatred, and he wanted to attack the Federation because he didn't like the fact that they were a diverse group of planets. And that's not cool, man. That's not. I can't get
right.
on board with that.
Right, but it's baby steps towards galactic understanding here, right? Like,
yeah.
uniting his people is a big step.
Right,
that's step one.
Now, from what I'm told, the T'Kuvma prequel comic is actually, it's like just out, I think, a couple, like this week is when it starts, I think. And it's going to get more into the Kuva's background, but that's not, you know, not that many people are going to be reading that compared to watching the show.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. It would have been better to have somebody that we really thought of as ours. And although I find Laurel intriguing, mm-hmm. and the fact that she's somehow made her way to our ship now, we don't know what her deal is, mm-hmm. is fascinating. And I like that character.
Well, I also thought Laurel would be pure. Like, I thought that a Klingon would make it to the Discovery at some point. I actually thought it would happen sooner for them to be, like, the first Klingon member of the Federation.
Oh, no, but Worf is the first Klingon Starfleet member.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I guess I should have
thought
about
that
more.
This is the whole prequel problem.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're
and
right,
it's
you're
sort
right.
of like, you know, because you're doing this prequel and you want to have the Klingon War, you kind of have to make the Klingons less dimensional.
Right.
But that means maybe Star Trek Discovery never comes, or Discovery never comes back.
Well, but it's like, you know, the original series, the Klingons are not that textured as characters.
Right.
They are preening villains, mm-hmm. you know.
Oh, absolutely. Which is why I think what they're going to do with Laurel, because she's isolated from the rest, they're all dead. She's like a Borg drone away from the rest of her gang.
She's 7 of 9, far from Unimatrix, whatever.
And then we have Tyler. Now, a show of hands, who thinks Tyler is Vok?
I now do.
Sure.
I don't care.
We're all raising our hands.
I have to say, all the
joiner.
All the chatter. Yeah. You guys on your last episode, or the two episodes ago, the finale made me.
We made you a pretty good
case. So it's sort of like one of those Westworld things where we're like all going to know the twist and they're going to be like,
I'm honestly surprised there's this much debate about it still. I think it's like super obvious at this point.
Well, I mean there.
Well, what's interesting is
such a profoundly uninteresting character that he has to have some crazy twist.
And he's also a love interest too.
That's so funny you say that, because in the finale when he's suffering from the PTSD and having these flashbacks, like being raped by Laurel, at least that's the insinuation. That's heavy stuff, and I actually think it's handled pretty well. You know, I agree. You could stuff that in. Like, Game of Thrones can't handle it as well as Star Trek Discovery did. And I don't know, I found that really intriguing. It's heavy stuff, and it's stylistically visceral. I thought it was interesting. But then if he does become Vok, then it's kind of like, are you undermining that a little?
Well, there is also the, then there's the real world reasoning for it. I mean, I don't know to what extent you've been reading these conspiracy theories.
Zero extent.
Would you? I mean, there are some... There are a trail of breadcrumbs that would lead you to believe. Uh-huh.
Right, well, what's the first thing that Lorca says to him when they meet in the jail? It's like, how did you survive for this long?
Yes, right. And that was the first thing, red flag for me, which is he said he's been there for 7 months. And we know that the sarcophagus ship has been dead in space for all that time. Mm-hmm. And he says that he's gotten by, he implies he's basically been the concubine, the kept man of the captain.
Sure.
Then we learn that the captain is Laurel, and you're like, time out. Laurel just got there, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And so clearly, but I think that the interesting thing about Vok is, or Tyler, is that I believe that he is Vok. I think that he does not know that he is Vok. I think this is there's a trigger phrase that's going to, a la the Manchurian Candidate is going to wake him up. And what's going to happen is he's going to retain his memories since he's become Tyler. He now has affection for Burnham. He likes the way Starfleet does business. Mm-hmm. And he's going to have a conflict of where are my loyalties.
His relationship with Burnham makes sense on paper, but I find like they don't have a lot of chemistry.
Whoa!
Is this a hot take?
That's a revenge served cold take. That is
hit your button. What was one?
Illogical.
I'm like waiting to say something because he's sort of hovering his finger over this giant soundboard.
I do not find your take
fascinating.
I find your take
negative, Captain.
So wait, do you like
their relationship? I do.
I don't like their relationship.
Do you like the relationship?
Yeah.
I don't hate it, but I also don't think. This might just be me, but my reaction usually when something like this happens is to not like it because I really don't think it's necessary. But if he is a Klingon, if he is Vok, I do think it would be really interesting for him to have this, like, you know, identity crisis.
Between
be
two
like,
worlds, because so does she. She has that same thing.
Right, that's what I mean by on paper, I see the connection, but they don't have any chemistry.
But he's a very boring guy.
He's not a handsome man. What are you talking about?
Sure, but chemistry.
Handsome people can be totally boring.
I actually thought
they were fine.
Their kiss in the Time Warp episode was really exciting. I loved, I gotta say, excited. I loved The time warp.
The time warp episode rules.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. After meeting Mud in that first episode, I'm kind of like, okay, I guess we could get him in on this show if we really needed to. Perfect. Like, he's so great.
It was great. But also, what's your favorite
what's
movie
name
of all time?
From The Office.
Rainn Wilson.
Rainn Wilson.
Rainn Wilson. Yeah, you're right. My favorite movie of all time is Groundhog Day.
Good
so,
movie.
That's why you like. Maybe
one of
time
my
warp.
Favorite Star Trek episodes is Cause and Effect, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the time loop is
it's great. It's a great
everyone
trope.
Can
device.
Learn and everyone can hear each other and people.
But also you can do stuff that you don't have to follow through on because it's like, you know.
All the ways Lorca dies in that episode is a treat.
And they also, they did a spin on it, which is normally, and same with Edge of Tomorrow, is you are always with you are always you the viewer are always omniscient to everything.
Oh,
and
sure.
In this one they pull the rug out from under you.
It starts like in the middle of it, right?
Starts in the middle, exactly.
He's like, we've done this like 20 other times before. Right. I was like, oh, okay.
This is great. I thought that was really, really cool.
Good call.
Alright, so that's how we're feeling then about the Klingons, and I do think Vok is gonna something's gonna happen with him, and we'll have to deal with it. We'll have to all get through it.
I'm just gonna deal with it.
Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
My next and final question
deal
is:
with it.
We talked about this a little bit. Is Lorca? I think Jason Isaacs is marvelous.
He's a tremendous actor.
He's so good.
He has been for many years.
Yeah, and we talked about this on one episode that he's been in so many things that I've seen him in, but I never really noticed it. I mean, you know, that's my problem in that I don't take...
You're face blind.
I'm a little face blind, and I take good acting for granted sometimes, you know? He's been in so many great things. He's got like a John Hamm thing. Sometimes, you know, sometimes.
John Hamm would be good on
what
this
if,
show.
Yeah, ooh. What if he... That would be so good.
Yeah, forget if Locke is
dies,
Tyler.
You have Captain Orca. John Hamm is here.
But do you think he is... he has a master plan? Or is he just scrambling? Because remember, the Admiral was going to rat him out and take his ship away from him.
Well, we have to go back to the third episode, I think.
We have to go back.
We have to go back. Time warp back.
All right, hold on. We're gonna time warp back.
Spore drive back.
We're going back.
Because I remember when, you know, Michael Burnham's being transported and they get attacked by, what do they get attacked by?
Spores? Oh, those little no. yes,
spore into the spore.
No, they were spores.
No, they were not spores. They were species GS516 or whatever.
Right.
They were a little bugs, you know.
And it kills
the pilot,
and then Burnham or Discovery obviously saves the day. And many people believe that that was like a Lorca plan to get Burnham.
Right.
On
he arranged it so that she would
that was like
be in the right place at the right
a
time.
A little.
It's pretty sinister.
Crazy.
Yeah,
it's
but
crazy.
It also made no sense. It's like, yes, just as I planned. I'm like, you planned for the bugs to be there? Like,
to agree, to agree with that theory is like, if you're a Sopranos fan, remember when Hesh's girlfriend died and he thought that Tony Soprano did it?
Yeah.
But there was no way like for it to be, but like he freaked out. That to me was the same thing. It's like, oh, he did it somehow. I don't know how. This is magic. Something happened.
He can talk to bugs.
He can talk to bugs. Like Aquaman can talk to fish. So
that's why he's so weird. He's like part bug.
He's a bug man.
He doesn't really know how to be holy.
I think there are things
human
that happen in the
that's
show.
That's my fan theory.
There are things that happen in the
Lorca
show.
Lorca is bug.
That Lorca... That would make you question Lorca, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
sure.
When he pushes people over the edge, when he goes against the Federation. Obviously, he's suffering from PTSD.
He's got a scar on his back.
Yeah. What was that scar from? That just war?
From his last ship, the last engagement.
You know, he's straining inside. His eyes are bad, so he needs to use his...
Well, that's...
I think it's
you don't
really
like that? I like
well,
that.
But, I mean, I like that they had the line from the Vice Admiral or Admiral or whatever she is, where she was like... It's the 23rd century. Fix your damn eyes.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? Your eyes don't work. You gotta
you can get new eyes.
Low eyes.
They did it like, just because in that last shot, he had to put the drops in to watch the ship.
I loved
which,
that.
Which is the best
like,
setup ever.
It's so good.
if all that was just set up for that scene, yeah, totally worth
pretty
it.
Good.
Absolutely.
I don't think
absolutely.
He has a master plan. I think he got Burnham and can use Burnham. I think he uses people, right?
Yeah.
He convinces... Stamets to sacrifice himself by intriguing him with the scientific
potential.
He's
a good captain in that way, like, but in a way that's not very both, Federation-y.
Right, you know, he can be both inspiring, which we've seen him do, but he can also be very manipulative with the same tool bag. But I don't see him...
He's a bit of a tool bag, if you ask me.
Tool bag, two box? I don't know. But he...
Maybe he had a transport accident with a tool bag.
What would be his master... plan. Like, he still gets kidnapped by the Klingons, right? Like, that's not part of his master plan. And actually, I have a question about that eventually, which is, so if Vok is actually Ash, how did they thought they were going to get Ash on the thing by getting Lorca? That, but Lorca, seems like a total coincidence.
If one day, when the tapes of Engage the Official Star Trek podcast are going to be combed over by historians, they will note that it was Brian who first suggested that Tyler was that was Vok, and I dismissed him and poo-pooed him, and my number one reason was no, because in getting him off the ship, Laurel was this close to death, right? She even has a scar on her face as a result. Mm. So they could not have orchestrated it that well, which will
I think that's going to be a plot hole.
A reckoning. No. I think a reckoning is coming. I mean, they're going to have to address it, or else I will... at the next.
What will you do? Will you set your phasers to kill?
I will be at the convention first in line asking the writers, Excuse me, I have a question for you. I don't understand.
But so, to throw it out to everybody, I wondered, because a lot of people are like, Lorca, you sent the Discovery spore warping into the mirror universe.
Spore-ping.
I hope it's not the mirror universe. Is it going to be the mirror universe? I've had enough of the mirror
universe. There are all those mirrors all over the place.
Far away. But they already did Far Away.
Is Burnham going to have a mustache? Is that going to be the mirror universe Burnham?
It can't just be in another pocket of the universe. Burnham. They did that. That's Voyager.
Well, they could be in the Kelvin universe.
No, they cannot because Paramount owns that
Chris
half.
That's right. We warped into a new contractual.
Well, I wonder if they're going to warp into the main timeline.
They are in the main timeline.
We think they're in the main timeline.
What's going on?
Oh, snap. They're going to warp in. They've been in a third timeline the whole time.
Exactly.
They're going to warp in and then it will look like the 1960s.
Hello.
Oh, that'd be good. If they do that, that's fine.
So cool.
That's it.
Someone shows up.
That'd be cool.
Awesome.
But so do people think that the accident with the spore drive is part of Lorca's plan? There are definitely people who think that. I don't. I think everything's an accident.
I think it's all an accident.
He wanted to go home at the end.
Yeah, right?
He wanted to pick up his award.
They have the whole heart to heart where he's like, one more jump. Like, there's no way Lorca could orchestrate.
No, he did.
Yes,
he did.
Absolutely he did.
He used reverse psychology on him.
I guess you're right.
And he did. I do think that.
To do what, Lorca?
To get out
to get him to do
get
one
out
more.
Of Dodge.
Well, yeah, he doesn't. So he doesn't get fired from being a captain.
But why would he get fired? Aren't they bringing him home to
Cornwell's
going to
rat him
out. Was on her way to
get
him fired.
He saved Cornwell's life.
She is by the book. She's going to say, this man saved my life, but he needs to be taken away from the bridge. And
another
he won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I think.
I think
that he definitely brought them to wherever it may be, Mirror Universe or anywhere, on purpose.
You think so? Oh,
I
don't think so.
But I don't think...
We have to go.
I don't think it was that thought out. I think it was like me pushing these dumb buttons. He's like, push one of them.
Just randomly.
But the map he had. I mean, he was clearly...
He didn't know,
He knew it was doing something. I mean, he had this whole plot out.
I know.
I mean, was he trying to get there specifically? Maybe. That's what we're trying to find out
January 7th.
I
don't know.
I mean, honestly, I guess my take on this is I can see what you guys are saying, and I can see how maybe Lorca could be a limited character. Like, you know, eventually maybe he'll be revealed, his motives will be darker than even previously assumed, and he'll die or he'll depart the show. But I like the character enough, and I like the performance so much that I'd rather that wasn't the case. Like, I'd like to keep Lorca around. I like the push and pull between him and Burnham, and I want to see what he's like in a non-war environment.
Yeah.
I kind of want the war to be over. We did the war. Great. You know, good war.
Be a real person now.
But, like, let's do, you know, you're the Discovery, right? You know, like, let's go explore something and see, like,
see
what
how
it's
he
like
does
to have that kind of... Because he's like a Jellicoe, right? You know, he's sort of...
You want to see him
Ronnie
as...
Cox-esque.
You want to see him as a captain in... Different type
in
of stakes
more
environments.
Classic Federation, whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like
but
that
it seems
could
like a
be
season
fun.
Two would have to be Lorca learning something. He's always been in power, and in the end of season one,
he gets
he's
busted
right,
down.
Right?
I mean, Burnham got busted down, and now she's
bust
building
him
herself.
Bust him up and down.
So
bust him around.
So obviously, being displaced, But knocks him off his pedestal. He doesn't know what to do.
That's fine. But that could be cool.
Right. I believe that. And that's why I'm like, it can't be of his making. It doesn't make sense.
I want to. We're going to have to wrap it up soon. But there is one other thing, right? We have to wrap it up soon.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. Pretty soon.
Okay.
Check that watch.
Check that.
Good watch. Where'd you get it?
Hey. You know, but before we do, I want to go around the room and ask real quick. There are a lot of great faces you see on the show that we haven't learned a lot about.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to know who's
that?
Who is your favorite and who do you want to learn more about? And I will take your note to Sarah Gatos if you're listening. She is the editor of IDW Comics Star Trek line. Mm-hmm. And if anybody's going to do a one shot on one of these faces to give us a little more background, e.g., Kienzer back in the day.
Love Kienzer. Mm.
It's IDW Ongoing number 17, my favorite comic book ever written. It's all about Kienzer's backstory. It's not really my favorite ever written, but it's in the top five. make a codicil to that remark. Starting with David Sims, who is your favorite
robot
face?
Lady? Give me Robot Lady. What is up with her?
Do we see Robot Lady?
34. No, what's her name? I actually don't know.
Ari,
Commander Arium.
Arium.
She's a commander. Wow. Lieutenant Commander. I'm assuming
robots can be commander.
She's a cyborg.
She can't be a robot, right?
She's a cyborg. Cyborg, right? Like, here's a official canon, not from the text, but from Harbarts and Berg talking on After Trek. Hello, sure. Matt Myra, if you're listening.
Hey, Matt.
They said that she is an alien, but also a cyborg. So she's not part machine, part human. Right. She's part alien, part machine, part human, part Flabnorp.
But she can't be, right, she can't be like an android because Data is this sort of unique creature when he is introduced. Yeah, but
positronic brain.
You're damn right. I like the look so much.
Oh, it's so good.
And there's so much potential for Star Trek character we haven't really dealt with a lot of.
Right.
So, like, give me that.
And similarly, she hasn't done much other than say, like, aye.
Well,
again,
none of them do anything.
To mention IDW Comics, and if you remember Star Trek Into Darkness, not the greatest film in the franchise.
No,
there was another
least favorite Star Trek film.
There was a cyborg dude with crazy eyes and, like, a dome on his head.
Vaguely,
and he went, affirmative, Captain. There's a one-shot on him also.
Oh,
so,
boy.
IDW's on this. They're taking my notes. Emma Stefanski, who is your favorite face from The Bridge that you'd like to know more about?
I'm going to have to say, and I unfortunately don't know her name, but the redhead with the little thingy on her face?
Yes, that would be Detmer, right?
Detmer.
Is that her name? That's a good name.
I'm looking it up.
I forget it. We talk about her because
she sounds like a hacker.
She had a little
bit. Detmer.
I mean, she was on the Shenzhou.
I'm in the mainframe.
She can get into anything.
she is from the Shenzhou,
mm-hmm.
right?
Because she was there.
She's a veteran of the Battle of the Binary Stars.
Saru and Michael.
Yeah.
And I guess nobody else. They're like the three who.
Those are the three that we know about.
Yeah.
And I think her name's Arya. Also, that's why it gets a little confusing because
I'm looking. I can't find it.
Is it not Detmer?
I hope it's Detmer.
It might be. It's something very similar to that if it's not.
Okay.
Is it like Dexter? Another good hacker name?
It's Detmer. Kayla Detmer.
Kayla
Detmer.
Kayla,
yep.
Not Ari.
There you go.
Kayla Detmer.
Is she a human?
She's a human, but she now has some facial implants.
Cybernetic
thanks
stuff.
To the, thanks to like the battle. Yeah, and I feel like if we're going to learn more, if the show lasts 100 years, we're going to learn about all of them. But I think that she's the one.
100 years.
100 years. I think she's the next one because she's already had a shot.
We've had so many shots of her. Because she like looks cool, but
she
also
she looks great, and also she has a relationship with Burnham already, and she is in the novel that I mentioned a moment ago
that you were reading last
Desperate
night.
Desperate Hours, yeah. That I'm only on page 50 of, but you know, I'm doing an episode, a book club episode with a guest who you all know, and we'll talk about that later.
Wow,
so that's exciting. Matt Patches, do you have a pick?
Well, I was going to say there aren't too many
frantically
other
scrolling. Well,
there's
yeah.
the handsome guy.
There's a lady with
handsome
cool hair.
Guy.
There's
the
African American woman with the who sits up front.
Yes, I think I'm going to go. There's another robotic character who. I think we've only seen kind of going like turning the. no one at home can hear me, but
yeah. Turning she, from left to right.
I believe it's a she because she has a bosom. If you will.
That's how you know.
Space bosom.
But you wouldn't be able to tell from her head because her head
yep,
is just
right,
like a computer monitor. She looks like
bad
guy from Saga.
You're talking about Snail Head.
Her name is Jira Narwani.
Didn't she get blown out of the deck?
Did she?
Oh, I'm worried.
I don't know who's alive anymore. It's so, there's so many characters.
There's a lot going
there's
on.
There's so many people.
It's just so unusual to have a Star Trek where you don't know most of the
bridge crew.
Yeah, you know, it's okay to have the one
choice.
Helmsman where you're like, oh, there's that guy.
This,
you know?
This is a choice that clearly, that probably Fuller made 3 years ago.
But that makes like, the community more vibrant and everybody is important. I like that.
Screw them.
I mean, if the show continues for years and years, we'll get to know them. But no, the bridge crew are not important. It's down in engineering. It's Tilly.
The lower decks.
Lower decks.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Do you think Q could show up? Second question. Do you think
Q can always show up?
Guinan could show up.
Guinan?
Guinan?
Guinan? Okay, Guinan
isn't
can
she
show
immortal?
Up.
Guinan well,
yes,
is thousands
because
of years old.
The Guinan, Enterprise right? B rescues her, which is pre this. No, it's post this. Now, and now she Guinan's
Guinan
out.
Is alive because she was alive during the 1800s on Earth.
No, I yes, of
she
course.
She hung out
Time's
with Mark
Arrow.
Twain, yeah.
Right, I guess that she's
they couldn't do it.
She's lit, but yeah, because like the Enterprise B rescues her. Right? From the ribbon back at the start
Nexus,
of generation.
The Nexus.
The Nexus.
Yeah.
It's a ribbon.
The ribbon.
It's an energy ribbon.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is before that. So she's hanging out. She's having space adventures.
Well, I mean, Guinan could be in it, but a la Harry Mudd, they wouldn't cast Whoopi Goldberg. They would cast somebody new.
I mean, Whoopi's
right.
a little
like
older,
Zoe
I guess.
Except they can't do that, I guess.
I guess I just
that would
want...
be somewhat outrageous.
I want, like, a pretty far-out character. And maybe...
I would not be...
Maybe Stamets is becoming that for them, but I want someone... Yeah. Who can, like, dial it down for a second. Take a deep breath. What I always liked about Guinan's scenes, and sometimes Q storylines in Next Generation...
Right, he had a wisdom sagacity.
You want
that's
total,
why I think I like the time warp, too, where we're, like, we're bouncing around the ship. We're like, hanging out in the ship. I like that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and also, the show lacks an other, right? Like, that was the classic Star Trek Bible thing, where it's like, your Data, your Odo, your EMH.
Well, it's...
But he's just an alien. You know, the character who is... Totally removed from the human experience.
It's
like
supposed
the sentient experience.
It's supposed to be Burnham, but it isn't.
Yeah.
Real. We've talked about this. It deviates from
like
the norm there. No, you're right.
Right, like a
the
character who is unlike
Data,
anyone.
7 of 9, Odo was always the other, and this show doesn't really have that.
I think
the
EMH is really the other of Voyager, personally. He's a holographic being!
You get both. You get two for Voyager. Pardon me, the EMH. You know what? Last question, then I know we got to go. If there were to be a character from canon like Harry Mudd that were to show up again, who would you want it to be? It would have to be a TOS person, probably.
Unless it's Q, like you said.
Mm. That couldn't
or Q2. What about Corbin Burnson bringing back?
All right.
Sorry.
Do you think they could bring Khan back after Into the Dark?
No, John Harrison could come back.
Classic Star Trek.
Oh, my God.
I love him.
Love that John Harrison. I want to thank everybody for coming on the show today. A big round of applause for our guests. We have Matt Patches, who is a tweet at Mr. Patches.
That's right.
At Mr. Patches. He's the executive editor of Thrillist.com. Emma Stefanski is here. She's Stefabski.
Yep.
Typo in her Twitter name, and Emma's work can be read at Vanity Fair and other outlets. And from the Atlantic, David Sims, you're at David Sims.
David L. Sims.
And Sims is S-I-M-S.
That's right.
And you can listen to David Sims's podcast called Blank Check.
Blank Check.
With
Blank
Griffin check. And David.
Check it out.
It's Blank a very it funny out. Show. I've been a guest once.
Mm-hmm.
Patches, has he been?
I've only been a guest once too. What's the deal?
We'll have you back. Jeez,
yeah,
everyone wants to be a guest.
David's been a guest.
Emma's been on it. Everyone in this room's been on Blank Check.
I thought you were
except
friends.
For I'm sorry,
Ryan has been on it. Patches' podcast is called "Fighting the Worm." It's been around for like 5 years,
really
maybe
bouncing
more.
Around with these outros.
Q2. Emma, where's your podcast?
I gotta get one. I don't know. Gotta I don't know what I podcast about.
Come on, take
do like bugs.
Emma's thoughts.
Take this mic home with you.
Okay, I'll just take it off the
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you everybody for listening to Star Trek, watching the show Star Trek Discovery, and listening to Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. Live long and prosper.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.